Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see so many of you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Good. We have to start with that, you know, get the mood going. Welcome to this important field hearing of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. And I'd like to start by thanking the committee chair, Senator Lisa Murkowski, and ranking member, Senator Maria Cantwell, for recognizing the importance of this issue for Hawaii and scheduling this field hearing. I'd like to also thank their staffs who have worked with my staff to prepare for this field hearing, and I welcome the two committee staff who traveled here from Washington, D.C., hard job, to join us. Could you raise your hand? Our two staff members from the committee. Today, we have an opportunity to explore how organizations and federal, state, and local governments can work together to protect Hawaii's native forested watersheds. A watershed is quite simply an area of land, such as a mountain or valley, which collects rainwater into a common outlet. In Hawaii, the most common outlet is the ocean, but some of our rainwater is absorbed by plants, some percolates into underground aquifers, and some flows into surface rivers and streams. Native forests are a critical component of how a watershed can collect rainwater. Fog condensing on trees up high in the Mauka regions can increase the collection and absorption in our watersheds by up to 30% annually. This is particularly important in Hawaii, where we depend on groundwater for 94% of our public water supply, the highest rate in the country. We need water to survive, and in Hawaii, the health of our watersheds is deeply connected to our way of life. Although there are 72 watersheds on Oahu, the Ko'olau Mountain Range provides nearly half of our drinking water and generates up to $14 billion to our economy every year. The stakes are clear. We need a holistic approach to water security and to protect our forested watersheds. Forested watersheds supply hundreds of billions, gallons of fresh water every year. Without healthy forests, most rainfall would simply run off into the ocean. As Hawaii's population has grown over the past century, our aquifers have shrunk at an alarming rate. The Pearl Harbor Aquifer, which supplies over 60% of Oahu's municipal drinking water, has shrunk by 50% compared to levels monitored in 1910. A number of issues have contributed to where we are today. Hawaii has seen decreased rainfall over the past 30 years. The proliferation of invasive flora and fauna also pose a growing danger to our forested watersheds. Feral ungulates such as pigs and goats increase deforestation, spread invasive plant species, and decrease native flora. Invasive plants also decrease groundwater recharge and increase the risk and severity of wildfire. In East Hawaii, strawberry guava forests reduce groundwater recharge by 85 million gallons per day, enough to fill 128 Olympic-sized swimming pools every single day. Native Hawaiian forests, by comparison, are 30 to 50% more efficient at recharging aquifers than strawberry guava forests. Meanwhile, an expanding population combined with Hawaii's tourism industry places increased stress on Hawaii's groundwater reserves. Climate change will accelerate these issues and create new ones. As temperatures continue to rise, we face the prospect of saltwater intrusion into groundwater as well as increased evaporation and drought. Fortunately, Hawaii has also proved to be an incubator for innovative strategies to protect our forested watersheds. The East Maui Watershed Partnership, established in 1991, connects private landowners with federal and state resources for conservation. Over the past two decades, we have exported the East Maui model to encompass 10 partnerships across the state. The Hawaii Community Foundation is also doing excellent work to promote water security in Hawaii. And recently, in 2013, they organized the Hawaii Freshwater Initiative, which brought together a range of stakeholders to identify a goal of generating an additional 100 million gallons of fresh water per day by 2030. In 2015, they published a blueprint for action that lays out a number of steps we can take over the coming years to help achieve this goal. I'm certainly looking forward to working with them to accomplish our shared goals. Another recent example of what can happen through conservation partnerships is Hawaii's Island Forests at Risk collaborative landscape proposal. I worked hard with the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Forest Service, and the Interior Department to ensure that this proposal was included in the President's budget. This proposal, which has received federal funding in the President's budget now for 2 years, is along with the Land and Water Conservation Fund, it's from the Land and Water Conservation Fund, includes 13 federal, state, and local partners, and seeks to expand protected habitat here in Hawaii. The Land and Water Conservation Fund is a very important fund, and it is authorized by the committee that is holding this hearing. And earlier this year, we successfully passed permanent funding authorization for the Land and Conservation Fund, both through this committee and in the Senate Bipartisan Energy Bill. And I will continue to work closely with my Senate colleagues to ensure that permanent authorization becomes law. This Water and Land Conservation Fund, as a lot of you know, is a very popular fund, but it is not permanent, and so it is a huge progress for us to make this a permanent fund. Protecting Hawaii's water at the source is critical to safeguarding Hawaii's water security, and I'm interested in hearing from all of our witnesses today about the many programs underway at the federal, state, and local levels to protect Hawaii's forested watershed. And I hope our discussion will provide some new and creative ideas about how the federal government can partner and support these initiatives. And I'm committed to continuing my work on this committee to support those initiatives. And we have some very knowledgeable witnesses and leaders joining us this morning. It's organized into three panels, comprised the first panel, the governor, members of our state legislature, the second panel comprises federal and state agency officials, and the third panel is comprised of local stakeholders. Governor Ige, you have made watershed protection a priority for the state, as was made clear with your announcement that they at the IUCN World Conservation Congress held in Hawaii recently to protect 30% of Hawaii's priority watersheds by 2030. I know that you can't stay for the full hearing, but I do appreciate your changing your schedule to join us today to share your views. I also want to welcome Senator Mike Gabbard, Chair of the Senate Committee on Water, Land, and Agriculture. Senator, I know you've recently had some bills come through your committee that are relevant to today's hearing, including one that sets ambitious standards for water reuse and reclamation, and another that establishes the Water Security Advisory Group that will support water innovation. And I also want to welcome Representative Yamane, Chair of the State House Water and Land Committee. And your committee has also been very hard at work on various water bills during this past legislature. And you note in your testimony that the number and diversity of water bills that recently passed are really at the forefront of what we need to do to address our water security needs. So I commend all of you for your leadership. And here's how this works. You see the light in front of you? Okay. You'll each have 5 minutes for your statement, and the lights will signal how much time you have remaining. And when you see the yellow light, that means you have 2 minutes to go, and of course when the red light goes on, that's it. But of course your full statements will be included in the committee record. So we'll start with you, Governor Ige. Sure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Senator Hirono. I just wanted to start off of my prepared remarks and just thank you for bringing the committee here and giving all of us here in Hawaii an opportunity to really talk about this most mm-hmm. important subject. And you were quite accurate that Senator Gabbard and Representative Yamane had a tremendous session this past session, really focused on water security, and the general issue of ensuring that we will have clean, fresh water for mm-hmm. our citizens forever. And so I just wanted to start by commending them. You definitely have included two of the best people, most inspiring advocates for water. As an island state, Hawaii is completely dependent on internal sources for our supply of fresh, clean water. There are no nearby states from which we can draw to meet our fresh water needs for drinking and agriculture. Our rainforests play a critical role in the capture and storage of water. Our forests, particularly the Hawaiian Koa Ohia rainforest, capture moisture from the trade winds and allow it to soak slowly through the layers of trees and ferns and mosses into our streams and aquifers. When the forests are healthy, our water source is secure and clean. When damaged by invasive species or fire or disease or loss of species, the forest loses its integrity and water capturing capability. That's why a major component of my administration's Sustainable Hawaii Initiative focuses on watershed protection. During the World Conservation Congress held in Honolulu last month, I made an ambitious commitment to the global community to protect 30% of Hawaii's priority watersheds, watershed forests, by 2030. Currently, about 15% of these priority watershed forests are protected. We can only reach this goal and go beyond it through public-private partnerships of landowners and managers who recognize that the best way to protect our forested watersheds and the source of our fresh water is through collaborative management across landscapes. Watershed partnerships are voluntary public-private alliances that allow us to steward native forested watersheds without regard to boundaries. Hawaii has 10 active watershed partnerships covering 2.2 million acres, roughly half the land of the entire state. They are helping to plan, identify funding, and carry out the dedicated, hard, on-the-ground work that is necessary to combat threats to our forests. In addition to working with the watershed partnerships, Hawaii has adopted specific policies to protect our water at its source. This year, the legislature passed and I signed Act 172, establishing a two-year pilot program for a water security advisory group to establish public-private partnerships that increase security, including increasing groundwater recharge. Federal funding for on-the-ground forest protection by or through the Fish and Wildlife Service, Forest Service, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and the National Park Service, along with research conducted by the United States Geological Service, is absolutely critical to these efforts. We sincerely appreciate the support of the federal agencies that allow us to stay on track to fund and accomplish watershed protection. Effective forest management means we have the basic infrastructure and stewardship in place to control the core threats to Hawaii forests. Currently, our greatest threat is a fungal disease called rapid ohia death on Hawaii Island. The ohia is the most abundant native tree in the state of Hawaii. It is the core structure of our native forested watersheds. The ohia provides habitat for many native species, and the spiritual and cultural importance of this tree in and to the Hawaiian culture is beyond compare. But this fungal disease is currently killing thousands of ohia trees on Hawaii Island, so far engulfing over 50,000 acres. We have established a rapid ohia death working group made up of numerous public and private partners, including our federal partners. This group's work is key to advancing research into the cause and extent of the disease and the pilot field projects to seek ways to contain the spread of the disease. This is not the only threat to our forests, which are comprised of native and endangered species. Hawaii is home to one-third of the endangered species listed in the nation. 49 new species were added to Hawaii's list of endangered species this year alone, some of which may have been avoided if adequate funding had been available in the past. Increased Fish and Wildlife Service Endangered Species Funds in addition to the proposed Recovering America's Wildlife Act, can provide urgently needed support for our endangered plants and wildlife and their habitats. In addition, reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund will be critical to protecting high priority lands, including watershed lands, from changes in use that would destroy their natural function. I thank the Committee on Energy and Natural Resources for this opportunity to focus on the threats to and potential support of our native forested watersheds, the source of life here in the Hawaiian Islands. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Governor. And if your schedule means that you need to leave us, I know our senator and representative and all our guests will understand. Thank you very much. Senator Gabbard.
Aloha, Senator Hirono, and mahalo nui for the opportunity to provide testimony at this field hearing regarding opportunities for federal and non-federal partnerships in integrated water management and efforts to improve water security in Hawaii. I commend the U.S. Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources for seeking this input and for looking for ways to collaborate to help our state improve its stewardship of this precious natural resource. As the chair of the State Senate's Water, Land, and Ag Committee, I can assure you that this topic will continue to be a top priority in my policymaking efforts. And as you mentioned in your remarks, Senator, our state had an incredible privilege last month to host the World Conservation Congress for the first time in our nation's history. At that event, which included over 10,000 delegates from 192 countries from around the world, it proved to be a perfect opportunity to showcase our leadership in sustainability through our Aloha Plus Challenge targets and to forge partnerships for future efforts. During his opening address at the Congress, Governor Ige announced our state's commitment to protecting 30% of our watersheds by 2030. And as you mentioned, the Hawaii Fresh Water Initiative has become a cornerstone of our state's efforts to improve integrated water management and water security in the state. Through this collaborative effort led by the Hawaii Community Foundation, three aggressive water strategy areas have been identified: conservation, recharge, and reuse. The principal goal of the initiative is to create 100 million gallons per day in additional reliable freshwater capacity for our islands by 2030, including recharging our aquifers through rainwater capture with a goal of 30 million gallons a day. Achieving these ambitious goals is directly tied to the successful stewardship of our watershed areas. On June 30th, I participated in a bill signing ceremony for 7 water supply related bills. This is the most water-related bills in memory and the direct result of a close partnership between the Water and Land Committee in the House and our committee in the Senate. I assure you that this issue will remain at the forefront in coming sessions. A few of the highlights include Act 169, Senate Bill 2645, provides funding for and requires the adoption of a 5-year statewide water loss audit program to encourage our water utilities to track leaks and prevent water waste. Act 170, which was HB 1749, amends the Hawaii State Water Plan to include the utilization of reclaimed water at all state and county facilities for all uses other than potable drinking water needs. The new law sets an ambitious goal for the water sector, just as Hawaii has adopted a nation-leading standard around 100% renewable energy. Act 172, House Bill 2040, establishes a 2-year natural capital investment partnership under the State Department of Land and Natural Resources to spur water innovation and public-private partnerships in the water sector. So as we look to our future priorities, it's important that the state and federal government provide sufficient financial resources to enable our watershed partnerships and the state DLNR to protect more of our watershed forests. We should also continue to encourage the EPA and the Department of Health, the State Department of Health, to work together to find good uses for the funding available through the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. Going beyond state and county buildings, we need to update our plumbing and building codes to include the latest efficiency and reuse potential and conserve our water resources. The state legislature will also revisit legislation to create a program that offers incentives to local residents who invest in water conservation systems. This field hearing is a welcome addition to the dialogue about how Hawaii can begin to lead in creating holistic, integrated solutions to our water challenges. With the impacts of climate change already altering our reality in the islands, the legislature will continue to take water seriously and, to the best of our ability, push aggressively to ensure that every drop of water that hits our islands is efficiently captured, distributed, and reused where possible. I'm grateful that the federal government continues to be a key partner in this effort. Mahalo once again for taking the time and effort to receive this input.
Thank you, Senator Gabbard. Representative Yamani.
Senator, nice to see you again, and thank you for bringing this committee to Hawaii, and welcome home. Before I begin, you know, I would like to highlight that this legislative session, in collaboration with the Senate, we took water very seriously. We came up with about 27 bills, and out of the 27 bills, we passed 14 into law. As part of the idea behind the water essence, we looked at water as being the lifeblood of our aina, and together with the senator, we looked at the Ahupua'a system, looking at water from the mountains to the sea. So we came up with a wide variety of bills, many of them noted by the previous speakers, which included looking at not only protecting our watershed, but also looking at how our water is used on a daily basis. You know, wanted to highlight, Senator, that I was able to go to Texas and California, seeing the extremes. In one area, helping with disasters due to flooding, and in another area, helping in California due to drought with wildfires. So coming home, working with the senator, we took water and water access and having clean, fresh water for our use as a, not only an economic issue, but a cultural and spiritual issue that we needed to address. So as we move forward, knowing that with the concerns with increase in climate change, with the reduction of rainfall by 19% over the last 20 years, we needed to do something now to be ahead of the game and potentially help continue that discussion on water reuse, water capture, and water sustainability. So some of the bills previously highlighted was the issues of doing water audits, looking at water infrastructure loans so that way we can build and support infrastructure that looks at water irrigation with the concept of using water wisely and actually prevention and reduction in evaporation so the water can reach its goal. Also, we looked at water not only as recharging our aquifers, but also how we use it. And we did do something, I think, that's going that led the nation, in which we passed the first law that bans the discharge of sewage into the oceans within 10 years. Senator, we also did is one of the things we wanted to do is make sure that we supported our dams and reservoirs, as well as the staff and workers at the Department of Land and Natural Resources. So we also invested $16 million to upgrade and protect our dams and reservoirs so they can be used for local farmers and food production. And Senator, you know, one of the things I would like to highlight is that we have a very good relationship with the federal government in so many ways, and we would like that to continue. We'd like to continue the opportunity to work with the federal government in investing in water reclamation, water reuse, water metering, stormwater recapture, and groundwater recharging projects. We also would like to highlight that the federal water conservation grants, like Water Smart funding, is important to Hawaii, and if it can continue and expand, we'd be greatly appreciated. And we also, I wanted to throw out that we've been working with the Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers, EPA and USDA, National Fish and Wildlife, and FEMA, and other federal government entities, and their ability to work in partnership with us is greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's clear that your leadership is bearing results, and I commend all of you, and especially the legislature, the two of you, for leading your two very important committees and focusing on reuse, recharge, infrastructure, really important. Our water infrastructure all across the country is in bad, it's in a bad state of repair, and so you're putting in the appropriations, which the Senate, the governor has to sign into law. So thank you very much for your partnering, and I look forward to working with all of you to identify federal resources, and it would be great if we could bring more federal resources, especially in the area of our fight against invasive species, because I recognize that we don't get as much of the pie that we probably should be getting. So we'll work together to make that happen. Mahalo nui loa.
Thank you.
So as we bring up the second panel, panel two, Steve Anthony, please, as they're changing the placards, you can come on up. So So you're going to be testifying in the order that I will be identifying you. So we have Steve Anthony, who is with the Center Director, Pacific Island Water Science Center, U.S. Geological Survey. And Randy Moore, Regional Forester, Pacific Southwest Region Forest Service, U.S. Department of Agriculture. And David Smith, Administrator, Division of Forestry and Wildlife, the State Department of Land and Natural Resources. Can you come forward? So, USGS is part of the Department of Interior, and it is doing important research in Hawaii and across the Pacific Islands. The Regional Forester, Randy Moore, your division or your service is housed within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So we have Department of Interior, Department of Agriculture, and then David Smith, he is with the State Department of Land and Natural Resources. I did have the opportunity last week to meet with DLNR Chair Suzanne Case and David to learn more about the department's responsibility to protect our watersheds. So welcome to all of you. Let's get started. And we're going to start with you. Oh, I guess we're, you know, I said this way, but I think we're going to start with you, Steve. Sorry. Steve, go ahead. Okay.
Senator Hirono, thank you for inviting me to discuss the U.S. Department of Interior's role in integrated water resource management and efforts to improve water security in Hawaii. In Hawaii, water resources help shape our culture, economy, and environment. As climate variability and change continues to stress limited water resources, water security will continue to grow as a national concern. As a result, integrated water resource management will be critical to support healthy, thriving environments and societies. The Department, through the U.S. Geological Survey, National Park Service, Pacific Islands Climate Science Center, and the Pacific Islands Climate Change Cooperative, is working to bring people together to ensure a sustainable and secure water future. Through this process, the Department partners with cultural stewards to help scientists understand culturally sensitive water resources. The Department also works with academic researchers to forecast climate change and its potential impacts on water, and with watershed managers and state and local agencies to understand how management activities can impact water resources. As part of this effort, the USGS provides objective science for the nation's water resources to support human well-being, healthy ecosystems, economic prosperity, and to anticipate and help resolve impending water resource conflicts and emergencies. The USGS also serves society through water resource monitoring and research to provide tools that managers and policymakers can use for preserving the quality and quantity of water resources. In Hawaii, the USGS is working in cooperation with the Hawaii Commission on Water Resource Management and other state and local agencies to expand and enhance monitoring of rainfall, groundwater, stream flow, and water quality, assess groundwater recharge and availability, estimate low flow conditions in our streams needed to establish in-stream flow standards, quantify the impacts of high priority non-native and dominant native plant species on freshwater availability, and to assess water quality related to land use activities. USGS is also developing information and tools to evaluate groundwater availability on several of the main islands as part of a regional study of the nation's principal aquifers. With respect to water use, USGS compiles and estimates water use information every 5 years in cooperation with state, federal, and local agencies. The USGS is providing funding opportunity to the state to enhance the understanding of surface water use in Hawaii. Finally, the USGS is assessing the effects of droughts and other climate variability on water resources. As mentioned previously, the Hawaii Freshwater Initiative was launched in 2013 to bring multiple diverse parties together to develop a forward-thinking and consensus-based strategy to increase water security in Hawaii. Organized by the independent nonprofit Hawaii Community Foundation, the initiative relied on a blue ribbon panel of experts, including farmers, landowners, scientists, conservationists, and government officials. DOI will continue to partner with the public and private sectors in Hawaii to to support the understanding of watershed management activities that affect water security, and to develop cost-shared activities for understanding how best to ensure a water-secure future. Given its mission, the USGS is ideally positioned to use and develop the best science and technology-based tools to evaluate water supply solutions and to continue helping water managers to establish adaptive management strategies that address water sustainability, and to partner with cultural stewards to understand the importance of long-term water security needs. This concludes my statement, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have at the end of the panel.
At the end of the panel. Thank you. Mr. Moore.
Senator Ronald, thank you and the committee for holding this important hearing and inviting me to testify on behalf of the USDA Forest Service regarding our partnership efforts to maintain and improve watershed conditions and the security of our water supply in Hawaii and across the United States. My name is Randy Moore, and I'm the Regional Forester for the Pacific Southwest region of the U.S. Forest Service. The history of the Forest Service and the National Forest actually began with the specific mandate to protect forested lands and to secure favorable conditions for water flow. Today, we're furthering that tradition with employees working across research and development, state and private forestry, and the National Forest System deputy areas in support of a healthy forest and grasslands across ownership boundaries and jurisdictions. We recognize that our world is increasingly complex and constantly changing. We couldn't be successful today without the efforts of our many partners at the state, federal, and local level, working side by side with our partners. Our work is vital to securing clean, abundant supplies for water for human use, for recreation, for agriculture purposes, and to support fish and wildlife populations and energy production. This is especially true in the context of a changing climate. My submitted testimony highlights several examples of our efforts in Hawaii and across the Western Pacific Islands. I'd like to use this opportunity to describe just a few of the successful national efforts underway that are pieces of the whole effort of the Forest Service in securing our nation's water future. Collaborative efforts, such as our partnership with Coca-Cola, are making a big difference on the ground. Since 2013, we've worked on 13 projects in 6 national forests across the country that have engaged hundreds of volunteers, contributing nearly 5,000 hours, while increasing the water capacity of thousands of acres of land. Coca-Cola, National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and others have invested more than $2.1 million to date, which has been matched by partners, including the National Forest Foundation, for a total investment of $4.5 million. Restoration work accomplished through this partnership returned more than 1 billion liters of water to the National Forest System, which is the source of drinking water for more than 60 million Americans. Working with the National Forest Foundation, projects such as the Hayman post-fire restoration work in Colorado brought together more than 20 partners to leverage more than $3.3 million to restore severely burned areas and watersheds that serve as municipal water supplies to Colorado and along the Front Range communities. Solutions were developed collaboratively and implemented using a mixture of volunteers, contractors, and agency resources to restore streams, reduce sedimentation, control invasive species, and improve vegetation. In northern Arizona, the Forest Service partnered with National Forest Foundation, the Salt River Project, and other stakeholders in the Northern Arizona Forest Fund, which focuses on streams and wetland restoration, sediment and erosion management. In California, the Pacific Southwest region signed the first master stewardship agreement between the Forest Service and Joint Powers Watershed Authority, comprised of 6 water agencies in 3 counties, the Upper McCallum Watershed Authority. The goal of this partnership is to enhance water supplies and protect water quality and the environment, both in the Upper McCallum River watershed as well as downstream. Another successful partnership has been forged between the U.S. Forest Service and the California Natural Resources Agency. In 2015, we entered into an MOU to work in partnerships to implement the Sierra Nevada Watershed Improvement Program, which is called the WIP. The WIP is a coordinated, integrated, collaborative program to restore the health of California's primary Sierra Nevada watershed through increased investments and needed policy changes. The activities undertaken by WIP benefits wildfire management, mitigation investment, restoration efforts, water and air quality, carbon storage, fish and wildlife, and community resilience. Beyond these specific projects, the National Forest System has undertaken an evaluation of watersheds using a watershed condition framework. This provides a tool for each forest and district to assess threats and deteriorated conditions and to prioritize work to ensure a strategic, targeted approach to improving watershed health. Water is perhaps the most fundamental of natural resources, and engaging youth in conservation stewardship and promoting healthy, active lifestyles is critical to the future management and the health of our nation's water supplies. The Forest Service, with other government agencies and partners at every level of the public and private sector, is dedicated to a continuing conservation legacy and helping to secure our water future. So, Senator, that concludes my statements, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at the end of the panel.
Thank you very much. I love the way that you all stay within the 5 minutes. It's really you must have done this before. All right, Mr. Smith.
Let's see if I can keep stay to that. Hi, I'm David Smith, Administrator with the Division of Forestry and Wildlife, and appreciate this opportunity to examine opportunities for federal and non-federal partnerships in integrated water management and efforts to improve water security in Hawaii. In the late 1800s, vast areas of Hawaiian forests were cleared by grazing, unregulated logging, and fires. As forests disappeared, our water supply was threatened, and streams and springs began to dry up across the state. In 1903, Hawaii established the first state forestry division in the nation, spurred by the recognition of the important connection between forests and water security. In the early 1900s, our agency undertook an ambitious effort to fence 1 million acres of forested watershed, remove introduced grazing animals, control wildfires, and plant trees to restore deforested areas. A century later, this work is no less relevant, and the state of Hawaii continues to prioritize watershed protection through the Governor's Sustainable Hawaii Initiative. With the recognition that 66% of Hawaii's forests are in private lands, we worked cooperatively with our federal and private partners to establish the Watershed Partnership Program in 1991, an innovative voluntary partnership of forest landowners, organizations, and agencies dedicated to the protection of forested watersheds. This groundbreaking model has been very successful in Hawaii, allowing landowners to work across ownership boundaries to cooperatively manage watersheds. A number of federal agencies assist with watershed protection research and management actions in Hawaii. They assist the state with the landscape scale protection, watershed protection, management of ecosystems and native species, and forest management on state and private lands. The U.S. Geological Survey's Pacific Islands Water Science Center has been conducting important research that quantifies how our forests protect our water supply and how forest degradation can dramatically decrease water availability. Research by the Biological Resources Division informs our management of wildlife and plant populations throughout the state. National parks and national wildlife refuges protect some of Hawaii's most intact native forests. The Department of Defense and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's endangered species programs are central to restoring populations of birds, plants, and invertebrates that are part of an interdependent network essential to overall forest ecosystem health. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, through its U.S. Forest Service, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Farm Service Agency, provides technical and funding support for Hawaii's watershed projects. In particular, the USDA competitive grants programs offered through the Landscape Scale Restoration, Forest Legacy, Joint Chiefs Restoration, and Regional Conservation Partnership programs directly contribute to forest management that enhances water quality and quantity in Hawaii. These competitive programs, in addition to the U.S. Forest Service and NRCS-based programs, have expanded important work in upland forests and are critical for water security. With the growing threats to the nation's forests, there's a need to increase the scale of proactive management. However, wildfire suppression costs are consuming the U.S. Forest Service's funding for preventative management to restore forest health and resilience, protect clean water supplies, and support climate change adaptation strategies. There's a clear need to have separate fire and emergency response funding for wildfire suppression to maintain the Forest Service restoration and management programs that promote proactive management of the nation's forests and will ultimately result in healthier, more resilient landscapes. Measures such as the proposed Wildfire Budgeting Response and Forest Management Act, the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, and the existing Healthy Forest Restoration Act can all help to promote sustainable forest management. Further, management of these diverse forest threats require up-to-date research as provided through programs such as the U.S. Forest Service's Institute of Pacific Islands Forestry. They provide expertise in critical natural resource management needs for us here in Hawaii. Hawaii is faced with other urgent forest health concerns. The governor talked about rapid ohia death, and the leadership from federal agencies such as the Forest Service, Agricultural Research Service, USGS, and National Park Service have helped to provide research and guidance, helping us to characterize and contain this disease. Federal agencies have also provided expertise to support the state's development of new mechanisms for watershed protection through programs that promise to provide financial incentives through private sector partnerships, such as payments or credits for ecosystem services and carbon sequestration. Hawaii was an early leader in watershed protection and continues to engage on a national scale. Federal agencies add to the efforts of our local agencies and organizations and are essential to the success of our interconnected watershed partnerships. Thank you for holding this hearing on this important issue. Hawaii has a long history of forest protection and partnerships, and we hope that federal support and collaboration will continue to expand as both the threats and the importance of these forests are magnified in the future.
Thank you very much to all of our panelists. I have some questions for each of you, as well as to the panel at large, if we can get to those. Mr. Smith, given the governor's recent announcement for the state to pursue the goal of protecting 30% of priority watersheds by 2030, and right now we're protecting, as he said, some 15%, it's clear that watershed protection and water security are priorities for our state. Can you speak more to how high of a priority these are for the state, and how does this compare to the importance and prioritization these were afforded by the state 10 or 20 years ago, and how do you think that these will be ranked 20 years from now? It's a series of questions, and you can speak on it. And along those lines, what needs to happen for the state to achieve its goal of protecting 30% of priority watersheds by 2030, and are there clear ways in which the federal agencies can contribute to helping the state reach this goal?
Yeah, there is currently a real strong push from the state government to protect forested watershed. This is a continuation. I mean, the baseline for our agency is watershed protection. So this has been a tradition in our agency since its inception, you know, so it's over 100 years of watershed protection. Just recently, there's been a very strong push from the recent administrations to protect a native forested watershed. And, you know, that we expect that to continue on to the future. Our legislative leaders recognize the need, and the governor is certainly strongly committed to it. And so with continued support, funding support at the state level, we should be able to reach our goals. It's definitely an ambitious program, and we're looking for legislative support, but we have been getting it, and it's along with leveraging through partnerships. You know, that's really one of the really keys here, is to be able to leverage with partnerships. You're going to hear from some stakeholders in a little while that are the folks that we work with out on the ground to get some of this work done. The federal agencies are key, you know, for things like rapid ohia death and a lot of our forest management programs. You know, the U.S. Forest Service is a key agency. I think a real important thing is this fire borrowing. We need to fix that, because that's taking money away from a lot of these sustainability programs. And so something needs to be done to make sure that we're able to put water into sustainability and forest health and resilience of forests so that they can adapt to some of the fire threats, especially in the Western United States. But even those Western United States fire problems affect us, because the fire borrowing takes from the Forest Service, and then Hawaii is affected by having the programs that really support Hawaiian watershed forests.
I'm sure you're aware that, or maybe you're not, but you certainly are, Ms. Moore, that the Energy Committee in the Senate has had a number of sessions relating to the fire borrowing and what that's doing to the budget. The Forest Service, while our committee is well aware of the extensive fire issues all across our country, and of which, by the way, Hawaii is on a par in terms of the number of acreage that's burned, of that our committee is very aware, and we just have to get everybody else to understand that this continual fire borrowing is very detrimental. And so, of course, we will continue to push for all of that. So do you feel that in the state of Hawaii, with everything that is happening with rapid ohia death, climate change, et cetera, that you're seeing a sense of urgency? You did say that we've been doing, these kinds of programs for 100 years, but do you feel more of a sense of urgency now with everything that's happening and what we need to do in Hawaii?
Absolutely, and we've really stepped up the efforts in the last several years. The legislature and the governor's request and legislative support has provided millions of dollars that was not previously allocated for watershed protection and management. And so there certainly is a sense of urgency. People are starting to understand and seeing the effects of climate change and whatnot, and we're going to feel that very strongly here in Hawaii because we are out in the middle of the Pacific. Mm-hmm. All our water comes from rain. Mm-hmm. The Hawaiians said the rainfall is the forest, and they understood very clearly that forest and water is interrelated.
I think that our federal our panelists from the federal government, you are very well aware that Hawaii probably is very uniquely situated, and that we get so much of the water that we need from our aquifers and rain, as opposed to rivers, dams. We don't have those in Hawaii. So the partnership with the federal government becomes even more important, the various programs that we have. I'm glad that the governor mentioned rapid ohia death, because to the extent that that is covering, I believe he said, some 50,000 acres, and we have not figured out how to stem this rapid ohia death issue in our forested areas.
Yeah,
so
it's really a scary issue.
Yeah.
The ohia is the keystone species for the Hawaiian forest. Losing it would be devastating. So those types of issues help to underlie the level of urgency in this.
And in that, we probably could use more help from the federal agencies. Particularly, would it be the Department of Agriculture, or what federal agency do you think would be the most
We work primarily with agriculture. We're also working with the National Park Service, because they have some big land holdings on the Big Island. But really being able to characterize the disease, figure out how it's spreading, and be able to contain it are our focus right now. And Forest Service has been one of our main.
By the way, since a large part of our blueprint for what we need to do regarding water usage is our community's understanding, so you're also focusing, perhaps it's the health department, I really don't know which state department, on conservation aspects, so that we need to use less water in the state of Hawaii per person.
Yes,
are we making inroads in that area?
Absolutely. It's not necessarily DLNR's main mission on the conservation side, but we do work very closely with the water resource agencies, looking at how water is delivered to residential and agricultural customers, and working on ways to deliver water more efficiently. They're turning some of the old ditch systems, which had a lot of leakage, into piped systems, so it's more efficient. And I know that Senator Gabbard, for instance, and Rick Imani are very keenly aware of the water conservation side mm-hmm. of the equation.
For Mr. Moore, I know that USDA has partnered with the Department of Interior to pilot the Western Watershed Enhancement Partnership in 6 Western states, and you did mention that in your testimony, I believe, and that's in the continental U.S. for the purpose of reducing wildfire risk to water supplies. And as you know, Hawaii is on a par with Western states, as I mentioned, on percent land burned, and invasive species contribute to wildfire risk and threaten our watersheds. Do you think this partnership should be made permanent? Because right now it's a pilot program. And do you see benefits to expanding the partnership to Hawaii and other Pacific islands? And if not, this specific partnership, do you see benefits and opportunities for the Forest Service or more broadly USDA to engage in similar partnerships in Hawaii?
Thank you, Senator. I certainly think that it's been very helpful in terms of engaging the greater community into securing all water flows and water rights. One of the things that we're noticing, though, is that this is going to be a long-term issue, and what we've done in the past, which we have to improve upon, is engaging our youth, because this is going to be, a long-term issue, and our youth need to understand the importance and the connection with these urban areas, with these rural areas that provide the water supply. And I'll give you an example in terms of how that's being affected. A lot of the reservoirs supply hydroelectric, mm-hmm. Which provides energy into urban populations. And when you have a wildfire, and it really affects a number of things. One, the carrying capacity of the reservoir to generate that electricity, but the other piece is, you know, the burning down of utility corridors and having to reroute energy, and in some cases do without energy. And having these partnerships really allows that greater community to be engaged in not only what we do, but how we go about, you know, being responsive to the water flow.
So since this is a pilot program right now with your agency, do you think that it should be made permanent, and can we have something like this in Hawaii?
I think if it's made permanent, it would be a good thing, and I certainly think it can apply to Hawaii. I think Hawaii has a unique opportunity here. It's almost like a little enclosed island.
Well, it is.
But what I've noticed, though, is that it's more of a family environment, and that most of your key nonprofit special interest groups, they work together quite well as compared to some of the mainland opportunities where there's a lot of consternation and sometimes litigation because we can't agree on things. And so I think putting this in Hawaii would be a great place because you have the partnerships and the relationships very mature.
Thank you. I'll be wanting to work with you on how to make
be happy to.
This happen and to come to Hawaii. For Mr. Anthony, in your testimony, you mentioned the Secure Water Act and the work that USGS is doing to better understand water availability under that authority. The Act authorizes a number of programs to address water security in the West, including programs to study and improve security through a wide range of activities. Unfortunately, Hawaii is not eligible for many of these programs because Hawaii is not a traditional reclamation state. And as an island state that faces severe, challenging water issues, I believe there is a need for Hawaii to access the same kinds of federal programs and assistance that have been so important in other Western states. What kinds of opportunities would strengthen federal engagement and support for addressing Hawaii's water security? And who do you think are some of the, what do you think are some of the opportunities and challenges to improving federal and non-federal partnerships to help address Hawaii's water challenges?
Thank you for that question. Yes, it is true that Hawaii is not termed a reclamation state, and if you would like more information on that and what it would take for Hawaii to become a reclamation state, I could have folks look into that and respond to the record for that. Mm-hmm. But what we have been able to do within the Department of Interior is we have an initiative called WaterSmart, and WaterSmart stands for Sustainable and Managed America's Resources for Tomorrow. And USGS's this WaterSmart initiative has allowed some collaborative efforts with USGS and the Bureau of Reclamation. And USGS's primary role in that is a national water census. And that effort is extremely important because for us to secure our water future, we need to understand how much water we're using and for what aspects of our sector, whether that be industrial, utilities for public supply, or agriculture. And our water use reporting in our nation is lacking. We, at USGS, work with states and federal agencies and local agencies to pull that information together every 5 years. However, that's not at a frequency that's sufficient enough to really assist decision makers. Also, through the National Water Census, we have been able to provide grant funding to states to try to improve water use reporting. There are other aspects with the National Water Census that we are involved in related to estimating stream flow at ungauged sites or in our nation, as well as assessing groundwater availability. And Hawaii is one of the areas where we have been doing these regional groundwater availability studies, building island-wide groundwater flow models for the island of Oahu, Oahu, Maui, and Kauai. Those models allow us to look at the impacts of developing groundwater on stream flow as well as salinity within the aquifers. Also, as part of the National Water Census, we're looking at evaporation losses such as evapotranspiration and the role of ecology in the importance of sustaining ecological services and how the development of water resources does have consequences on our ecology, and it's important to find a way to balance our needs for humans as well as ecology. And then finally, under the Water Smart activity that USGS has, there are geographic focus area studies that are being undertaken, and there are three currently underway within the U.S., and I'm hoping that we could bring one of those focus area studies to Hawaii in the future.
I would like to work with you on a number of those issues, including enabling the state of Hawaii to access all of these programs that other Western states have access to. Now, there have been several of our testifiers who commented on a blueprint for action. I don't know if the two of you have had a chance to read this, but one of the suggestions that applies to what you were just talking about is regarding the reporting. So the council that put together this blueprint recommends that USGS and our Water Commission and county water departments develop and establish consistent methods, standards, and indicators to monitor the status and trends in freshwater availability, et cetera. So if all of these different agencies are not using comparable measurements, that makes it difficult for decision makers to figure out what's really going on. So is this something that you can work with us on to develop these consistent measurements?
Yes, in fact, just this year, in cooperation with the State Water Commission, USGS is engaging in a cooperative effort with them to identify what our water resource monitoring needs mm-hmm. are in our state. Over the number of last few decades, there's been a decline in monitoring as money has gotten tight for water resource monitoring. And so this effort is focused on trying to figure out where do we need to collect rainfall data, groundwater levels, salinity data in our wells, mm-hmm. as well as stream flow. And that effort is being undertaken, again, in cooperation with the State Water Commission, but also through that process, we'll be engaging the county water departments and other stakeholders. And one aspect of that is, how do we bring together the data that is also collected by others, not just USGS? And as that initiative talks about, ultimately creating a shared environment where the mm-hmm. all the data from the various agencies and others are coming together, and perhaps one place for that is, say, at the University of Hawaii, as they've recently have an NSF grant called EPSCoR.
$20 million, I
yes.
think it is.
And so that is a very nice opportunity mm-hmm. to bring together
yes.
the efforts of many.
Well, thank you very much. Where am I, Beth, in terms of this panel? Okay, so it's very clear that there are a lot of entities, private, public, federal, county, people working in all of these areas, and the word holistic was mentioned by the governor and others. So for the entire panel, can you provide an example of a really successful landscape scale management, something that you mentioned, you used that term, Dave, partnership, and landscape scale meaning working across boundaries and jurisdictions and taking into account the water, land, wildlife, etc., for a holistic management approach, and what aspects allowed the successful partnership to work, and are those successful translatable to watershed management initiatives here in Hawaii, and possibly for the two of you, because you have an awareness of what's going on with these holistic approaches all across the country. Is there a model that we can look at?
Yeah, my experience is, we don't have a national forest in Hawaii, so the experiences will be differently. We'll be working through the state and looking at landscape. But I'll give you some examples in California. Under the Farm Bill, the Good Neighbor Authority, we have been working to use a lot of different monies coming in to look at landscapes. And the thing that we've noticed is that watersheds, it just has no boundaries. And that we need to get together federal, state, local, and special interests to look at what's best for that landscape and what's best for that land. The Farm Bill Authority, particularly under the Good Neighbor part, has given us the opportunity to have state money spent on federal lands and vice versa. You can also make investments, and we're exploring opportunities now where investment bankers are looking at the ideal of investment and restoration of the landscape if they can receive some type of a profit. We haven't worked that out yet, but it's these types of new ideals that are emerging simply by taking a landscape approach and trying to bring the greater community into trying to be responsive to the needs. And so the state, California, for example, has a cap-and-trade system. Some of the revenues that's generated from a cap-and-trade system, I noticed the governor had put about $150 million into the forestry sector for the 2016 funding. And whether that's going to go through or not, I don't quite know, but it's recognizing the importance of forestry and how that greater community needs to be working together. So we're working on that now, and we have examples across the U.S., Arizona, Colorado, and other places, where we're trying to work across boundaries so that it's irrelevant who manages those different boundaries. And we're seeing some successes there in California. You know, we've estimated, I don't know if I'm giving you more than what you're asking for, but we've estimated national forests in California, about 55 to 60% of all the water runs off national forests, and it's the drinking supply for about 23 million Californians. If you had to put a value on that water, it's about $9.5 billion per year, and that also helps support about a $38 billion agriculture industry. And so because you have most of that coming off national forests, we're beginning to look at ways to explore engaging a lot of other people in what we do. The federal government, we would sit down and say, here's what we think. What do you think about what we think? And what we find in now through collaboration and facilitating the different expertise out in the greater community is that we sit down together and we decide what we want to think about and what we want to do. And I think, so I'm very hopeful moving into the future that that's the way to go, more of a collaborative, facilitative approach. And using some of the authorities, like under the Farm Bill, and the Good Neighbor Authority is helping us to do that from the federal side.
So it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all, of course, no. But the key is for the stakeholders to be sitting together,
yes.
and to identify what resources there are at the state, local, and federal level, and then to leverage those resources. Something you mentioned is was interesting, that you're getting the financial industry in California to step in. And is this something that I don't recall that there are any of our financial industries who are involved in these issues?
Well, we're starting to work on models for carbon sequestration and getting different private organizations involved. So folks like Hawaiian Airlines, Coca-Cola, as Randy mentioned, and we're looking at Outrigger Hotels, perhaps Disney. Some of these folks that cater to the visitor industry, and looking at trying to calculate carbon impacts of you know, traveling and going on vacation and flying and all that. And these private companies are very interested in participating in trying to figure out how they can give back, how people that are traveling, how they can provide opportunities for people that are traveling to help to offset some of the impacts of their activities. And so
I think that's really important, because I would have liked to have somebody from our tourism industry be able to work with us today, but we weren't able to do that at the moment. Tourism is our number one industry, and they obviously use a lot of water, and so they need to be at the table. Thank you very much for working toward that goal. Did you want to add anything
to
this conversation?
I'd like to point out two examples of partnership activities that have been, I think, are a good model to be thinking about, and one being an effort that's taking part in the western part of the United States, and it has to do with the National Drought Resilient Partnership that President Obama had called for, where it's bringing together federal agencies to form a federal action plan to help states and local entities build resilience towards drought. And as you're well aware, there are many federal agencies that have a role in water. And there are efforts needed to help bring us together. Mm-hmm. And this partnership is, from what I'm hearing, it has been quite effective. And it's something that we've heard from the Western States Water Council, that they're frustrated with federal agencies in that there are so many of them that deal with water, and there needs to be better alignment and working towards common goals. And I think this partnership seems to be a very good example of that. The other is something that's been going on locally here in Hawaii, which is a NOAA-funded effort called Pacific RESA. And with that effort, there are researchers at the East-West Center and others at the University of Hawaii, and USGS is partnering with them to try to bring together decision-making tools that are addressing not only water, but land management decisions. And one of their focus areas is Maui, and they've been interacting with county and state government officials, trying to understand, okay, what are the land management plans of the future? And then USGS's role in that is trying to figure out how those changes in land use may impact groundwater recharge and ultimately groundwater availability.
Okay. I know that I'm going to be working following up with both of you regarding the various programs and whatever we can do to enable Hawaii to access more of the resources and programs and any other ideas, because what's emerging, of course, is the need to bring everybody to the table in a way that doesn't drive everybody crazy, right, with 50 people sitting here and all of that. So we want to be efficient and effective in how we proceed. Thank you very much to the second panel. So our third panel we have Matt Gonser. He is with the Extension faculty with the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College program. The university has done a lot of work looking at water security issues and, as mentioned, recently received a $20 million grant from the National Science Foundation to study over the next 5 years water sustainable issues in Hawaii. And then next we have Trey Menard, chair of the Hawaii Association of Watershed Partnerships. Trey works on Kauai and will provide not only the perspective of on-the-ground watershed protection, but also some activities that are ongoing on our neighbor islands. Next is Dr. Sam Gon, who is a senior scientist and cultural advisor with the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii, or TNCH. Dr. Gon, I look forward to hearing from you not only the various watershed protection activities that TNCH is doing, but also the importance of watershed protection and water security to the Native Hawaiian community. And we'll start with you, Matt.
Aloha and good morning. Thank you, Senator Hirono, and the committee for scheduling this hearing and allowing us to speak on the subject of integrated water management and efforts to improve Hawaii's water landscape. I also thank my fellow speakers for your important contributions on the subject today. Lastly, I thank Dr. Darren Lerner, the director of the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program, interim director of the UH Water Resources Research Center, and the university director of the Pacific Islands Climate Science Center for affording me this opportunity to speak and represent the Hawaii Sea Grant Program. The following is a summary of my full testimony, which has been duly submitted for the record. Thank you to the Senate for passing S-2848, the Water Resources Development Act of 2016. There are critical reauthorizations, modifications, and additions designated in that bill, specifically those in Title VII, Subtitle B and C, relating to clean water infrastructure and innovative financing, respectively. We're also grateful to you, Senator Hirono, for highlighting areas that are important for Hawaii, such as making it easier for the federal government to enter into public-private partnerships for water infrastructure projects, and directing the EPA to promote green stormwater infrastructure projects. Hawaii has a history of water quality and quantity challenges. In the last 2 years alone, heavy summer rains from both named and unnamed storms resulted in significant disruptions, groundwater advisories, and temporary beach closures due to sewage spills at multiple locations. In my work as an extension agent and member of the Hawaii Sea Grant faculty, I've heard strong local interest in receiving additional support, guidance, and concentrated attention on topics of community greening, green infrastructure, and flood risk reduction and resilience. In addition to certain rain and stormwater conservation and efficiency practices of water capture, recycling, and reuse, and the regulation of stormwater at the parcel and building scale, there are opportunities for interventions within the public right-of-way that can provide multiple community co-benefits. This highlights the integrated management and resource needs, connecting agencies such as the National Academy of Building Sciences, Federal Highways Administration, HUD, and nonprofit professional organizations with national memberships in the design and planning fields. A case study in the challenges we are discussing today is the Alawai Watershed. The state, city, and county of Honolulu, Corps of Engineers, and community stakeholders have been engaged in efforts to understand and better manage the Alawai Watershed. These efforts were advanced this past legislative session with the adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 61, which endorses and supports the Alawai Watershed Partnership. With interest in holistic systems approach to solving issues in the Alawai watershed through Waikiki, there are visions for ecosystem restoration, water quality improvements, flood mitigation and risk transfer, and a coordinating entity to implement these visions. Partners encourage the Congress's continued support of the Corps in the Alawai watershed through necessary appropriations and authorizations, and urges to use the full suite of tools provided through WERDA. Trees are possibly the most conspicuous piece of environmental infrastructure, and one that accrues benefits and becomes more valuable over time, while also addressing other community, environmental, and social justice disparities. Trees are long-term investments with significantly underappreciated returns on that investment. I currently sit on the Advisory Council for the State DLNR Kaulunani Urban and Community Forestry Program. This program focuses on improving the health and viability of trees in Hawaii's urban and town centers. Funding for this program comes from the state and private forestry branch of the USDA Forest Service. The work of DLNR, the Watershed Partnerships, and Kaulunani are critical for a future Green Hawaii, and the programs appreciate Congress's continued support. Lastly, communities statewide have benefited from various technical assistance opportunities offered through the EPA, FTA, and NOAA. Just last week, Hawaii Sea Grant, in partnership with the City and County of Honolulu, submitted an application to the EPA to gain support towards flood resilience. If awarded, your small investment into the EPA's research and services will be further leveraged and extended through Hawaii Sea Grant's statewide extension network, providing greater returns on the EPA's Building Blocks for Sustainable Communities program. The service of organizations such as Sea Grant within NOAA and WRRC and PICSC within the USGS continue to serve important research, extension, and education outlets for the vast and developing green infrastructure and climate and water resilience resources developed by EPA and others. Such activities only further federal resources, which is consistent with interagency partnerships and a 2011 Memorandum of Agreement between the EPA and NOAA, for example. This particular partnership identifies a strong Sea Grant role in delivering products, services, and research results to local community decision makers to meet the partnership's potential to serve state and local governments. In closing, we thank the committee for its willingness to conduct this field hearing and work on these critical issues. Thank you, Senator Hirono, for the opportunity to speak today. And with respect to today's subject, we thank you for your continued support of the University of Hawaii and its Sea Grant College Program, Water Resources Research Center, and Pacific Islands Climate Center.
Thank you. Mr. Menard.
Okay. Aloha, Senator.
Aloha.
My name is Trey Menard, and I'm providing testimony in my capacity as the chair of the Hawaii Association of Watershed Partnerships, and also as, from my perspective as a coordinator of the Kauai Watershed Alliance for the last 11 years. Much of my testimony has already been covered, so I'm going to excerpt it somewhat. The fundamental concept behind the watershed partnership model stems from the realization that the only way to address the primary threats to the forest is to work across landowner boundaries and apply the necessary management actions consistently and at a large scale. Before the partnerships, these actions were occurring mostly on state and federal lands with very little private landowner cooperation. This resulted in fragmented protection. For example, before the Kauai Watershed Alliance was formed in 2002, there was very little communication between the state and private landowners, and virtually no forest protection actions taking place on private land, and very little interest in conservation in general. Today, as David Smith mentioned, the private landowners account for a significant proportion of our watershed lands, upwards of 66%. And these private landowners are now committed to protecting watersheds and conserving native forests. The partnership meetings are a forum to discuss everything from a variety of topics, environment, ranging from endangered species, invasive species, water issues, and pollution. Whenever federal agencies are planning a particular action, like critical habitat designations, endangered species listings, they contact watershed partnerships so that we can facilitate communications with those private landowners. For the past 25 years, the coordinators of these partnerships and their staff have been constructing fences and removing destructive feral-hooved animals from thousands of acres of priority watershed areas throughout the state and controlling invasive plants, some of which use significantly more water than the native vegetation. In many cases, they've been active in preventing and controlling wildfires, combating forest diseases and pests like rapid ohia death, planting native trees and restoring degraded areas, educating the public about the cultural, economic, and environmental importance of our Hawaii, of our forests. All of these actions are detailed in watershed management plans, which are developed by the coordinators and approved by partners in each of the partnerships, and then implemented by the coordinators and their staff.
Sorry.
That's okay. The coordinators are responsible for compiling most of the environmental documentation and acquiring permits with the help of from their staff at the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife, and holding public meetings. A typical day for the coordinators and their staff can include working with local hunters on the location of the next fence, managing complex helicopter operations in bad weather, hiking miles through dense forest and rugged terrain, crossing raging streams or rappelling off of cliffs. This is a difficult and dangerous job and requires highly trained, very skilled, and dedicated staff willing to do whatever it takes to achieve the goals. We've mentioned Governor Ige's goal, the 30 by 30, 30% of our watershed forests should be protected by 2030. We are currently protecting 15%, and 5% of that has been protected in the last 5 years. If we're to meet this ambitious goal, we need to maintain the pace of adding new fenced and managed acres while maintaining the acres that have already been fenced and protected. Daunting as it may seem, the watershed partnerships are fully prepared to make this goal a reality. We have the technology, the experience, and the proven track record of success. What we need is a constant flow of funding. And this is where the agencies, like the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, and even the Department of Defense, can play a decisive role. We have a long history of working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and the U.S. Army, among many more, and hope to continue that relationship in the coming years. In closing, I wanted to leave you with a quotation from Hawaii's first territorial forester, Ralph S. Hosmer. Quote, "In Hawaii, the most valuable product of the forest is water rather than wood. It follows that conservation of its watersheds by keeping them permanently clothed and protecting forests is the chief duty of the forester." Unquote. The first foresters in Hawaii recognized the importance of watershed protection to sustain our freshwater resources. And now it's our duty to carry on that vision and secure our future for Hawaii and its people. Mahalo for inviting me to present this committee.
Thank you. Dr. Gahn.
Senator Hirono, if you'll indulge me for a moment before I begin. So aloha, I'm Sam Ohugan, Senior Scientist and Cultural Advisor for the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii, State Chapter of the National and Global Conservation NGO. In Hawaii, we manage 14 preserves and work in 19 coastal sites, partnering with government, private parties, and local communities to help manage forests and coastal areas. So mahalo again for allowing me to testify at this field hearing. Hawaii's native ecosystems, once extended from the summits of each of our islands to the sea, and our cultural traditions reflect a long, close relationship with native forests. Hawaiians traditionally see ourselves as part of, not separated from, nature, considering the plants and animals that share our world as kin, elders, ancestors. The land is aina, that which feeds us, and its rich diversity help nurture and shape an equally rich and thriving island culture. The forested upland watersheds in particular were considered wawakua, the realm of gods, and not for human incursion except for very specific needs and under strict ceremonial protocols. Water came from the sacred forested realm to feed agricultural fields and fish ponds. Forest trees provided wood for temples, houses, canoes, tools. Forest plants were gathered for medicine, food, ornament, and many other purposes. Today, roughly half of our native land cover is gone, particularly from the lowlands, and the vast majority of native plants and animals find refuge in our upland forests. We, too, still depend on that native forest for our survival and well-being. Our forests are our primary watersheds. They protect our reefs and our beaches from runoff. They clean and cool our air. They soothe and renew our spirits. And while historical impacts from agriculture, grazing, logging, and development are responsible for much of the initial loss of native ecosystems, the threat today is ongoing degradation by invasive non-native species. Invasive animals that prey upon native species and spread disease, and invasive plants that compete with and displace native ecosystems. In doing so, they transform our forests by simplifying forest structure, altering soil composition, increasing the risk of fire, and diminishing watershed function. Fresh water is actually quite a limited resource in the middle of the Pacific. Hawaii's latitude at 20 degrees is not a high rainfall zone, but for the topography and the forest cover of our Hawaiian high islands, we would actually have very little fresh water. Trade winds moving across the ocean encounter our tall islands. Air is pushed upward rapidly into lower temperature and pressure. Airborne moisture condenses, creating clouds and rain, a classic orographic effect. But cloud and fog interception by Hawaii's forests increase total water input by as much as 50% above the base annual rainfall. The 30% you cited earlier, that was from previous studies, and it was on Ka'ala, in fact. The most recent numbers indicate closer to 50%.
Oh.
Intact Hawaiian forests, therefore, act as a living sponge, collect fog, rain, and moisture, and slowly deliver this water into our aquifers and streams, absorbing greenhouse gases and greatly reducing runoff. And on Oahu, where 85% of Hawaii's population lives, the forested Ko'ola Mountains alone provide 135 billion gallons of fresh water annually, or about half of Oahu's groundwater recharge. Seen or unseen, that same forest function operates on all the main islands, providing each island's water supplies. Despite some reprieve during the last two El Nino years, several locations in the state have experienced prolonged drought, and it's intensifying again. We're seeing more frequent and more severe storms that increase destructive runoff, but at the same time, we see less total rainfall overall, higher temperatures that impact our watershed health and encourage outbreaks of pests and diseases. We've seen a century-long trend of decline of rainfall here, and even sharper declines in recent decades. Recent studies have shown that native forests are better at capturing rainwater and recharging aquifers than forests degraded by invasive species. In response to these troubling developments, we're taking action to mitigate and adapt to bolster the resilience of our natural and human communities. Conservancy is working with our conservation partners, public and private, throughout the islands to protect our precious forested watersheds. Our strategic approach is focused on managing our statewide network of forest preserves and integral parts of the larger public-private watershed partnership. In conclusion, we see opportunity for greater collaboration. We want to take this opportunity to thank you for being a champion of the Land and Water Conservation Fund's Hawaiian Forests at Risk project. We want to fix the U.S. Forest Wildfire Funding Mechanism, as you pointed out, and provide equity for Hawaii in the federal endangered species recovery funding so that it's more truly proportional to the very large numbers of threatened and endangered species found here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for starting your testimony with a chant. Thank you very much. Okay, so I want to thank the panelists. This is the last panel. This is a question for all of the witnesses. Do you think there is a role for federal agencies to play in landscape scale watershed protection in Hawaii? And if so, what would that role look like? And would it be a program to provide grants for certain activities? Would it be the federal agencies assisting existing partnerships to provide technical assistance? What would the ideal federal role look like to you?
You. I would just like to offer and go back to your original point about what a watershed is, and reminding ourselves that in our discussions today, we're certainly focused on our upper forested watersheds, but that common outlet is the sea. So we need additional consideration for where we inhabit, so the state urban lands, and understanding that the landscape scale strategies will be vastly different in the conservation lands versus those urban and town centers. The landscape of funding opportunities seem to be shifting more towards competitive opportunities. I'm a little cautious towards that because of, you know, our small population. There's only so much new initiative we can try to take on at any one point in time. So if there are ways to increase some of the support for programs that were discussed earlier today and from my colleagues here, that would be beneficial. But also reconsidering ways we can utilize the state revolving water funds for infrastructure type projects, either for both clean drinking water, but also some of the green infrastructure, and the recharge to reduce the rainfall runoff would be additionally beneficial.
I'll get back to you after if the other two testifiers would like to make a comment.
Sure. I think from the watershed partnership standpoint, we do work with multiple federal agencies, both in the funding aspect as well as some of the technical expertise, like for instance from the USGS. I think one of the main benefits of working with the federal government is through the funding, obviously, and the ability that the watershed partnerships to be able to leverage state funding, private funding, to help, and to help actually provide match for federal funds. In the past, we've been able to get federal funding for fencing projects, and particularly on Kauai, where I work. During the downturn, economic downturn, we were able to get funding through the Forest Service, through the ARA program, enabled us to actually hire a local fence contractor to construct our fence, and that actually saved a lot of jobs. And so it was.
Are you talking about the ARA?
Yeah, the ARA funds in 2011,
yes.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was a one-shot deal.
It was a one-shot
yes.
deal, but it came
but
right.
But thank
at the
you
right.
for maximizing what you did with that money.
Yeah. I think going forward, one of the biggest challenges I mentioned in my testimony is not only building more fences and to keep pace and to achieve that 30% goal, but also to maintain the areas that we've already fenced off. And I think one of the, there's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I like to use, that one of the fundamental human flaws is that everybody wants to build and nobody wants to maintain. Mm-hmm. And I think that, the more funding we can get to not only build more fences, but also enable us to maintain what we've already got is going to be, very important to reach that goal.
Well, in line with that comment, we have huge infrastructure needs throughout our country to the trillions. We need to address those. Did you want to ask something, Dr. Don?
Certainly. I'm currently serving as the chair of the Hawaii Conservation Alliance. That the alliance is, it's a group of federal, state, and private organizations that together have combined to try to minimize the amount of duplication and to maximize the optimization of our efforts together in conservation in Hawaii. It includes the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Forest Service, the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii, Kamehameha Schools, Office of Hawaiian Affairs, State of Hawaii, Division of Aquatic Resources, and you name it. If it's an organization in Hawaii that's dealing with conservation, the Hawaii Conservation Alliance includes those members. It was through our efforts that we were able to pull together the resources and the arguments to bring the world to Hawaii just recently, and it was an amazing opportunity for us to demonstrate the power of that kind of collaboration of federal, state, and private organizations in bringing a focus on conservation. Therefore, the idea of how to fund our efforts here in Hawaii is a matter of coordination of the existing programs and ensuring that the highest priority management occurs. And in the Conservation Alliance, the idea of protecting those large watersheds, those large landscapes of remaining native-dominated ecosystems in Hawaii that provide so many services to us, is the way to go. And we get together and talk about what the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and all of the federal agencies are doing, and how we can best coordinate those kinds of efforts. So I think that would be one excellent route to bring to bear, focus, and optimize the federal opportunities that might be here.
So Matt, just very briefly, I know that the UH recently, as I mentioned before, received a $20 million. Was that a competitive grant that you sought with the University of Hawaii sought and got?
I actually am not so familiar with the Ikebai opportunity that was offered. I believe it was Science Foundation.
So the National Science Foundation. So it's a five-year study. That's a hefty amount for studying sustainability in terms of water. So if we'll talk to the appropriate person. I guess it's not you, but you're doing other good things.
Thank you.
All right. So some of the things that you mentioned leads me to this next question to all of you. Do you think that it would be helpful if federal agencies, such as the EPA, NOAA, DOI, USDA, and I think I also heard FDA, DOD, all of these federal agencies that have something to do with the subject matter at hand, formed a watershed protection council at the federal level to align their various watershed protection efforts and make accessing information and resources easier and support on-the-ground efforts that folks such as you are doing. Would that help to create a federal watershed protection council?
I'm not sure on, say, the specifics of a title for it, but it sounds sort of in line with what has been a really successful federal partnership between EPA, HUD, and DOT, the Partnership for Sustainable Communities, which really helps to educate on the interconnectedness of all these systems that impact whether it's water resources, health, or environmental quality. So along those lines, perhaps there are certainly better ways to bring in some of those federal agencies that don't necessarily get so engaged in the extension and education, whether it's FEMA through flood risk reduction, because that obviously has a landscape and a watershed component. Others in NOAA and USGS as well, sure. I could certainly see, to Sam's, Dr. Gahn's point, better opportunities for coordination, just to continue to maximize the investments that are already in place.
Yeah, I think from my experience working with multiple agencies, you know, I think it would be beneficial to have some kind of a council where they could coordinate a lot of their actions, in particular from the funding standpoint. You know, some agencies have certain requirements for grants that are different than other agencies, and certain agencies are going to be focused on funding a particular thing, like if there's a lot of endangered species in a particular area, then that's the place to go. You go to the Fish and Wildlife Service. Mm-hmm. If it's a forest protection project, then you go to the Forest Service. I mean, I think that coordinating between those agencies and being able to say, okay, you know, let's make sure that these guys get enough money to do the endangered species stuff and protect, you know, this much watershed, and enough to get to the Forest Service to make sure that there's enough fire protection and other, you know, forest pathogens and pest money to go towards also protecting that. I think, and so, you know, sometimes I wonder if there's somewhat of a competition for funding, and maybe there could be some better coordination, so there's you know, maybe less overlap and conflict. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but if, I mean, in general, I think it works. It works fairly well. I mean, we've gotten, you know, a lot of support from the federal agencies, yes, and we've been able to make that work.
So this is not an idea to create yet another group of people who are siloed. The whole idea is to break through the silos,
right,
and to maximize the resources, which are scarce enough as they are. Did you want to?
Yes, I certainly. I think that the model that we have here in Hawaii with the Hawaii Conservation Alliance, as I mentioned, was built out of exactly that kind of frustration with the idea of slightly differing mandates, mm-hmm, different ways of mobilizing funds, different mission statements. Mm-hmm. And so what the Conservation Alliance has been able to do over the course of its existence since, before this millennium, certainly, is to identify what each of those mandates allow them to do, and then to work to optimize the total picture of what the state, federal, and private organizations within the state can do. So it was built kind of out of a desperation of the fact that we had so many endangered species, limited size, great pressures on our native ecosystems to preserve them, and you know, and as a result, we have been able to work out a very amazingly cooperative relationship, and I think that same kind of relationship can be forged at a national level.
Okay. Because it is not the easiest thing to identify all of the various federal resources and whatever grants there are, because each one has a slightly different a set of probably requirements and outcomes and all of that, and it would help if everything were sort of put in one place so that as we deal with these issues that are common to all of us, and we can do a better job. So I'll probably continue to talk with you folks and some of our federal agencies to see whether this is a fruitful kind of a idea. So Trey, do you feel that the state's goal of protecting 30% of Hawaii's priority watersheds by 2030 is adequate and achievable? And I did want to ask you, you noted that prior to 2002, there wasn't that much private sector, private landowners engagement in protecting our forested watersheds, and now they're much more engaged. So maybe you can explain why this change, were there some tax incentives or something like that? Do you think that the 30%, 30 by 30 is an achievable goal, and what do we have to do to get there?
Okay, well, let me start with, I meant mainly on Kauai. There was not a lot of private landowner mm-hmm. involvement. There has been, prior to that, there was quite a bit of private landowner involvement on East Maui, where the first watershed partnership yes. formed. And so I think that was the model that we were following.
Yes, and there are now 10, right?
Yeah.
Those partnerships.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, you know, when I first started as a coordinator on Kauai, and we started with the first watershed partnership meetings, and we got everybody in the same room together, and people were just kind of like looking at each other going, wow, this is the first time we've ever really all sat down and had a conversation. And so I think from there, I think that really developed into a base of trust, so that when we were able to start moving forward on a plan and developing, plans for fencing, and for large-scale invasive species control that would cross boundaries, I think that level of trust needed to happen prior to that. You know, so now we were able to build fences across boundaries mm-hmm. and including multiple landowners. I think before the partnership, that probably wouldn't have happened. So that gets to the point of is it achievable? I believe it is because with these partnerships. The communication is important because now when we do these large-scale projects, all the rights of entry, all the legal paperwork, all the, the differing processes that each landowner has and each agency has, we can consolidate that into one meeting, essentially, and say, okay, this is the plan. How many, everybody's on board. It kind of greases the wheels administratively to get these things done. And so when we do get the money, we're able to mobilize and get the money on the ground quickly and get the job done within the time frame of, the allotted time frame. I think that the reason I believe it's achievable is, like I said, we've achieved that in the last 5 years. We got that 5%. And so if we stay on track and maybe with a little bit of an acceleration, by 2030, I think we'll be really close to 30%. Yes, I do think it's achievable. Is it going to be easy? No, it's not going to be easy, and it's probably going to be increasingly more difficult as we approach that 30% goal. I think right now, when we first started doing this, we really kind of grabbed the low hanging fruits in terms of the lands that we were going to target, the most logistically simple, the politically simple, places that didn't have much conflict. And I think as we approach that 30% at the end, we're going to need to mm-hmm. really work hard to, with communities and be able to, really focus on achieving that. But I think I do believe it is possible, yes.
So I do realize that on the neighbor islands, projects such as fencing, those are really important. But I'm wondering whether on Oahu, which is a much more urban situation, are we doing enough to pay attention to the koalas and Mauna Kaala, for example, in terms of protecting the watersheds on Oahu?
I'll let Trey speak more about the partnerships in general, but for example, the Koalau Watershed Partnership, as you might imagine, stretches the entire range of the watershed. But the similar practices of removal of both invasive flora and fauna and the reintroduction of native species in combination with the fencing is, as I understand, still the primary strategy, and it has proven successful across the state.
Yes. Yeah, I would say that, yeah, it has improved quite a bit in the last few years. The Watershed Partnership and the Koalau has been able to put in some significantly sized fences, and really achieve some pretty big goals. I think, really when you look at the Coalhouse, it's a really challenging watershed partnership, because if you look at a landowner map, there's I don't know, a lot. There's probably more landowners, per acre on the Coalhouse than anywhere in Hawaii. And so that's always a challenge because, when you're trying to do a big project with multiple, thousands of acres, that's even more landowners that you have to get, have agreement with and be able to really kind of coordinate with. But nonetheless, I mean, they've really worked hard and they've been very successful so far at getting some areas, fenced off in the central part of the Coalhouse. The other challenge, I think, in the Coalhouse is that it is an interface of very intensive urban development. So, like particularly in the Southern Coalhouse, where you folks work, I mean, I think that it's even more critical to work in collaboration with the more urban watershed partnerships and be able to come up with strategies that span that interface. And I think that's going to be a challenge, but I think that's where it's exciting. I think it's a very exciting opportunity to do that.
I'd like to add to that by pointing out that since 85% of the population of the state is on the island of Oahu, there is an opportunity to educate and bring awareness up for the majority of the state's population by engaging a more focused effort in the protection of both Ko'olau and Waianae watersheds. The watershed history, as Dave Smith pointed out earlier, in 1903, the very first forest reserves in what would be the United States, is something that means that there's a long-standing tradition of protection of our watersheds and recognition that those upland forests are essential to our survival in the long run. It's easy to be disconnected from that system, but I think that everyone looks up into the mountain, sees that green watershed, and it's easy to make that connection visually that forest is essential to our life and to the water supply of this island, the most populated one. So if we were going to put together a program to enhance both watershed development and protection in the Waianae Mountains and Ko'olau, it's been done before. The arguments are there in place. We have a long history of very compelling statements about the importance of this. The Board of Water Supply would be right on it, of course. And I think that everyone in the state and on the island of Oahu is in a position to understand, grasp, and appreciate how important those kinds of projects would be.
You talked about, Seminar, all of the multiple landowners. So how do we incentivize them to work with all of you to protect our watersheds? Are there, as I mentioned, are there tax incentives in place, or what do we have to encourage them to come to the table?
Well, I think there are tax incentives in place for entering into conservation agreements, conservation easements, and so forth. And I also work for the Nature Conservancy, and they've done a fair amount of those, as well as the land trusts and so forth. Those are obviously probably the most direct incentive to do conservation on their lands. From the standpoint of, like, on Kauai, the landowners were incentivized by the very need for water. Some of our landowners were particularly concerned about the future availability of water. Some of them had hydroelectric operations. Others had agricultural operations that relied on the water from the forest. And so when we first, started talking about protecting the watershed, they didn't really approach it from, hey, we need some kind of a financial incentive to do this. Mm-hmm. They actually saw the need for it, and they actually realized it. One of the things, like, we talked a little bit about dams and so forth. When sediment runs down streams and fills up reservoirs or clogs up intakes, that's a big maintenance issue for them. And I think one of the landowners that we worked with on Kauai was, particularly interested in eliminating a lot of the causes of that erosion. So, there are incentives outside of just basic tax incentives and financial incentives, at least in the short term.
I have a question for you, Dr. Kahn. You and many folks in this room today know that land in Hawaii, of course, is very expensive. And add to that the resources necessary to protect and conserve the land, or in some cases rehabilitate the land, and pretty soon you have a very large price tag. Can you speak to the importance of the Land and Water Conservation Fund in helping landowners and land managers here in Hawaii to protect our forests and our watersheds?
Certainly the idea of being able to protect the lands and waters, the forests, and the ecosystems that we rely on with funds that are devoted to the protection of those resources, that's an extremely important incentive. It goes hand in hand with just the inherent value, cultural, water, and other values that go with those forested ecosystems. So we certainly, as we said, thank you for being a champion of Land and Water Conservation Fund, and I think that there are huge opportunities in Hawaii for the application of those funds. The nice thing is that we've got a limited acreage. We know where those important forested areas are. We know the connections between the land and the water resources, and so we would be able to move quickly to apply those funds in Hawaii.
You were talking about, you think that there is a awareness in the state of the importance of our watersheds. Do you agree with that, that there's a general population awareness of the need to conserve water and that it is not a finite resource in Hawaii?
I would say that it needs to improve.
There's always a need for improvement,
yeah.
But I think that the Board of Water Supply and various other folks have made it pretty clear to the population at large of the need to conserve, of the fact that we have limited water supplies, and maybe to a lesser extent of where that water comes from and what it depends on in order to maintain a supply into the future.
For example, you know, you said that on Kauai, the landowners there saw the need, and so it's not as though they needed a financial incentive to step forward and do what needed to happen. Places like California, where they experience droughts where it's very clear that water is a finite resource there, and they put in all kinds of programs that we've never had to do here, such as not flushing toilets and all of that. So I'm just not sure whether there is that connection between, from a consumer standpoint, because don't we consume more water in the state per capita than any other state?
That
may
be true.
Way up there.
We also, at least on this island, have huge water resources, and I think that has allowed us to be complacent about these kinds of things. Therefore, the recent droughts on Maui and Hawaii in particular are beginning to draw attention to the fact that one size does not fit all across the archipelago, that there are places in which the water resources are in a different state, and that there is much more need for conservation and for protection of the sources of that water. Oahu might be, you know, it rains pretty much every day, and so people get a feeling they get complacent about that kind of thing. They look up into the mountain and they see that it's generally green, and so you get the feel that our forests are in good shape, whereas those who know the conservation challenges of invasive weeds and the simplification of our forest watersheds, and therefore a degradation of their ability to act as watershed, those kinds of things are not so forefront in the minds of people, and I think that needs to be enhanced.
Yes, especially as the reality is that our aquifers are having to support a lot more people, a lot more tourists, and I think there's more we can do along those lines. And do you think that there's a particular awareness in the Native Hawaiian community as to the importance of water?
I think that it's very easy to find very cogent arguments for the importance and the connection between forested watersheds and water supply in Hawaiian traditional knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is certainly clear in the messages that were placed at the IUCN World Conservation Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And so the impression was that people in Hawaii were cognizant of those kinds of things. But I think that although Hawaiian knowledge is going to be important in pointing out and making the connections between people and place and people and forests and the importance of native species and forests in general, Not everyone is in a state of sufficient enlightenment along those lines. There's always room for education and improvement in awareness.
So when you before you began your testimony, you did a chant. Could you just briefly tell us what?
Yes, it talked about how Oahu is clad in ohu-ohu, in the mist that clings to the mountain, and that this is a mist that provides water to the ohi'alaka, which is a type of ohi'a tree in legend with white flowers on one side and red flowers on the other. And it talks about how that mist comes in to the mountains, and how the upright cliffs allow the rains to come and provide water to us all. It speaks to an integration of the nature of just natural phenomena in the mythology and in the stories, and in just the awareness of natural process to bring water to the land and provide life to people. So that's what that holy was about. I felt that it was an appropriate one for this particular session.
Yes.
So that's why I shared it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to point out some of the features of that holy and why it was shared.
Thank you. The cultural aspects of how the people of Hawaii feel about our environment are very unique.
And in fact, Rapid Ohi'a Death on Hawaii Island, when Mary Monarch came, it was an opportunity for disaster. If the world came to Hawaii, moved around on the island there, and then moved to other islands and spread that disease to other islands. But it was the Hawaiian community and the Mary Monarch organizers that took the lead and made sure to minimize the amount of ohi'a lehua that was going to be used in ornamentation, and also to make sure that there was an opportunity to dispose of any lay material so that it stayed on that island rather than moving back to the other islands. And so I think that cultural awareness and the cultural practitioners were really important in staving off what could have been an archipelagic disaster.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. Matt, you bring to the table the unique perspective of community planning and design. And do you feel that groups in Hawaii understand the importance of and are amenable to designing urban spaces to incorporate green infrastructure and decrease demand on Hawaii's freshwater resources? And can you provide some examples or your assessment of what future projects and developments this perspective may be particularly important for?
Thank you for that question. And I shared their sentiments about levels of awareness and education and always opportunities to increase that. And I'm glad you asked this question, because I was going to offer that, as though we're speaking about water volume or water quantity, which is a very important discussion, I think we need a really full court press on water quality issues, particularly in our urban and community areas. The same ways that we can make that direct connection with the environmental services that green or public spaces or trees, as I alluded to before, serve, as they're trying to work in the upper forest to really manage water where it falls, we need a similar approach in our community and town centers. Either we need to do it voluntarily, or in the next several rounds of our NPDES permits, we will be required to. So it's really the opportunity to get ahead of the game, to manage it on site. And I alluded to the public right-of-way, because I really think, so public right-of-way meaning either building to building or sidewalk to sidewalk, it's really our streets. The conspicuous relationship that we all have with this, which is our public space, though primarily for automobiles, if we can reintroduce nature and think about urban street trees through our Kaulunani Urban and Community Forestry Program and other programs at the county levels, I think that's a huge opportunity to both mitigate heat island as well as manage water on site, and will just become more and more important as our rain conditions evolve and change. Research coming out of an arboretum in Illinois recently found that of all the water inputs into a bioswale that had trees planted, so a bioswale meaning a slightly depressed area for water to infiltrate, filter somewhat, perhaps overflow into another area, from the irrigation and rainfall, these trees in bioswales were managing 50 to 75% of that water, so it was evapotranspirating. So just the ability of these, I would call them urban forests, to help us both green Hawaii's communities and manage rainfall on site, I think will become integral as we move forward.
Urban forests, that's an interesting thought. Do we have any such thing on Oahu?
We do. We actually, Oahu has some of the best information of its urban canopy. There's a new urban canopy assessment rolling out in the next couple of years, and through Administrator Smith's DOFA, as I mentioned, the Urban and Community Forestry Program, which receives Forest Service funding from USDA and is managed through the DLNR. They've been the ones managing the grant monies to then do these assessments. The sad story is, in this next rollout, I believe we'll have seen a 5% decrease over 5 years of our urban canopy. So, as I mentioned, these are long-term investments. They hopefully have long and healthy lives, so we need to start planting them now for the future.
So when you talk about urban forests, do you mean, is it a matter of planting trees, maybe particular kinds of trees?
I would say the science is out on
environment.
We still need more information on which species could provide those benefits I alluded to of urban heat mitigation and the stormwater management. But when I say urban forestry, I really mean everything outside of our state conservation lands. It would be that expansive from our densely urban to our suburban and even to our rural town centers.
So, for example, if we had pocket parks throughout our community, then it would matter what kind of trees are planted in those parks. Because I don't know that there was much consideration given to those aspects of helping our water issues.
Yeah, and again, I'm just going to make a plug for the streets, as they're essentially rivers or conduits for rainwater to flow expediently to the ocean. So if there are ways to repurpose, again, that which is our public space to provide these other sustainability and community benefits that I believe are consistent with the values of a lot of the residents of the state, I think that's a very important opportunity to re-envision how we can be a green community and a model moving forward.
So are we doing well in terms of the kind of considerations in our urban landscape that you just mentioned?
In short, we could do better. But we do have complete streets policies, which is a little bit off topic, but it's about reallocating space for multiple modes of moving about our communities. And there are segments in there that include considerations for green infrastructure and urban forests.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to thank our three panels, and of course the governor and our senator and representative and our people who came from the mainland. Thank you very much. I hope that maybe you can spend at least another day here or so to see what our environment is like and what our culture is, because I very much welcome the opportunity for members of the administration to come to Hawaii and to see that Hawaii is much more than a tourism and military place, important as those activities are to the state of Hawaii. And so please feel free to, you can work with my staff on any places that you could go to experience, some of the aspects of Hawaii that will enable you to become advocates for us as we go forward. And for this last panel, thank you very much for all that you do. Now, there will be an opportunity for people who want to submit questions. Let me see. There's a magic words that I'm supposed to say in terms of the record being open. The official record for this committee hearing will be open for 2 weeks. And after this hearing, should anyone want to submit any written testimony, you can do so by sending your testimony to testimony@hirono.senate.gov. And for senators and their staff, members of the committee or not, questions for the record are due by the close of business tomorrow. So thank you very much. I know that we'll be working with you as we go forward. This is a very important topic. And while the Energy Committee deals with what would seem to be energy issues, I really thought that I wanted to bring focus on the importance of our forested watershed, and that is a part of the Energy Committee's jurisdiction. So
thank you very much for that.
Mahalo nui loa to each of you. This hearing is adjourned.